365年宇宙時代来たる。それは遠い将来のことではない。全宇宙及び地球上に SOS 発せらる。
今や我々人類ははっきりと宇宙時代に突入したことを認めざるを得ません。
宇宙科学者克己博士たちが月の裏側で発見したものは何か。
Level 3.0's party, vote.
無駄な抵抗をやめて、我らナタールに降伏するのだ。
Girl, KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st, from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Tonic Lounge in Portland. Next Level 3.0 is a collaboration with Flawless Shade, the House of Flora, and the House of Ada, featuring KBOO's Dina B and DJ Gila River Monster, and more DJs and performers. Costumes are highly recommended. Again, that's Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st, from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Sky Blue reminding you to listen, that you're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned at midnight for the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. But right now, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups. Gremlin time.
My family took a vacation trip by car each and every time the Earth completed its laborious cycle around the sun. It usually came in late July or the first 2 weeks in August, but it made no difference. It always went the same way. For 14 straight years, our vacations were spent in southern Michigan on the shores of colorful Clear Lake. Clear Lake. It was many things, but the one thing it wasn't was clear. In fact, it was never even clear why we went there, but we did. From June on, 5 minutes after school let out, my kid brother and I were in a feverish sweat of anticipation about this annual pilgrimage. The old man, playing it cool, didn't get really heated up until maybe a month or so before the big day. My mother would begin laying in supplies. As far as I was concerned, the only thing that counted was my meager collection of dime store fishing tackle and my BB gun. For weeks, I gazed at fish hooks, rolled lead sinkers over my tongue, drenched my Sears Roebuck 79-cent reel in 3-in-1 oil. About 2 weeks or so before the big day, the old man would take the olds down to Koswinski's garage for a tune-up, which in our case was purely a Kabbalistic ritual. It was like fingering a string of beads or burning incense. But southern Michigan was a long way from northern Indiana, and the Olds was our only hope. She was a large, hulking four-door sedan of a peculiar faded green color that the old man always called goat vomit green. This was his big party joke. He always said it when everybody was eating. The Olds had been in the hands of at least four previous owners, all of whom had left their individual marks on body and seat, fender and grill. The week before vacation, the old man would go into high gear. on Monday of the last week, just after supper. He would make the big phone call, putting through a long-distance call to Michigan. Putting through a long-distance call to Michigan was not something that happened every day in our house. "Is this long distance?" he shouted into the receiver. "Operator, I want to put through a long-distance call to Michigan." The rest of us sat in hushed excitement, trepidation, and fear. This was crucial. Would there be a cabin available? The old man played it for all it was worth. "Marcellus, Michigan. Ollie Hop Noodles, feed and grain store. I want to talk to Mr. Hop Noodle." He listened intently, then put his hand over the phone and whispered, "I can hear him ringing him. Hello, Ollie. You old son of a bitch, guess who this is?" "Right, how'd you guess?" "Hey, we want the green one this year." "Yeah, the one on the other side of the outhouse." "You did? That's great. Ollie had two more holes put in the outhouse," he reported in an aside to us. "Okay, Ollie. See you next week." The die was cast.
You are entering a zone of sound and imagery. A landscape of frequency. A vocabulary of modulation. There is the signpost up ahead. Please adjust your chronometers. This is Gremlin Time.
Well, tonight, this is Fortunato. Welcome to Gremlin Time. Tonight, we are going to take a summer vacation. We had our little bit of summer tease here. It happens here in the pre-summer times here in Portland. This is a story by Gene Shepherd. From his book, Wanda Hickey and Her Night of Wicked Wonders. So let's hit the road. We were on our way, almost. The week dragged by interminably. But finally, it was Saturday night. All day, my mother had been cleaning up the house for the two-week hiatus, nailing down the screens, locking the basement windows, packing suitcases, trunks, cardboard boxes, laundry bags, and wicker baskets with everything she could lay her hands on. The old man, who worked on Saturday, came roaring up the drive, the Oles already snarling in defiance over what was about to occur. Charged into the kitchen, his eyes rolling wildly, his very being radiating sparks of excitement. "Okay now, this year we're going to get up early and we're going to be on the road by 6 o'clock, no later. This time we're going to beat the traffic." My mother, who had heard all this before, kept toiling stoically over her enormous pile of effluvia. "When that alarm goes off at 4:30, the old man said, to no one in particular, "I don't want to hear no griping. Okay now, let's check the list." Far into the night, they went over every can of pork and beans, every slice of bacon, every box of crackers, every undershirt and rubber band, even the jug of citronella, that foul feat of liquid mystically and erroneously believed to be effective in warding off mosquitoes of the Michigan variety. Finally, sometime after midnight, the uproar slowly petered out. A few minutes later, the alarm went off and my kid brother and I leaped out of the sack like shots. This was it. From the next bedroom came a muffled curse. "For Christ's sake, will you turn that damn thing off?" The mutterings from my mother as she put on her slippers in the dark. "Don't worry," growled the old man in his familiar litany. "Yeah, I get right up. I'm just resting." More mutterings. "Look, I'm just resting my eyes. I'm getting right up." The vacation had begun as it always began. Already not 3 minutes old, and it was imperceptibly inching downhill. 5 minutes later, my mother, wearing her Chinese red bathrobe with tiny flecks of petrified egg on the lapels, her eyes puffed sleepily, peered down at a pot of simmering oatmeal in the clammy kitchen. My brother and I ran insanely up and down the basement stairs, dragging stuff out of the coal bin that we figured we might need at the lake. For over a month, I've been collecting night crawlers in a Chase and Sandborg coffee can. I brought them up from the basement to be ready to pack when the time came. I toyed with my oatmeal, but it was such a great day that I actually went ahead and ate it. My brother, who had been known to go for over 2 years without eating, This morning, in excitement, he polished off two troughs of Quaker oats, usually his quota for a month. My mother, her hair curlers clinking, called out, "Are you up?" Silence. "Are you up?" Silence. "It's getting late." "Shut up, for Christ's sake!" Wearily, she bent back over the sink. She had been this route before. Half an hour later, the sun, streaming in through the kitchen windows, finally flushed the old man out into the open. By now, the mound of impedimenta filled the kitchen and overflowed out onto the back porch. His BVDs hanging limply, the old man weaved unsteadily between the piles and collapsed into a chair. "Give me some coffee." He slumped unshaven, staring numbly at the kitchen table until my mother set the coffee down in front of him. She did not speak. She knew that this was no time for conversation. He lit a lucky, took a mighty drag, and then sipped gingerly at the scalding black coffee, his eyes glaring benevolently ahead. My old man had begun every day of his life since the age of four with a lucky strike and a cup of black coffee. He inhaled each one alternatively, grimly, deeply. During this routine, it was sheer suicide to goad him. The sun rose higher and higher, grew hotter and muggier as only late July in northern Indiana can. The first faint whiff of oil refinery smoke and blast furnace dust eddied in through the screen door. My brother and I were busy carrying bags, suitcases, and lumpy cardboard boxes tied with string out into the driveway. My mother wordlessly squeezed lemons for the lemonade we always carried along in our big 2-gallon thermos. The old man stonily began his second cup. Halfway through it, he suddenly looked up. The sun now well over the high-tension wires and striking them full on his stubbled face. "Well," he shouted, "are we all set to go?" This was the signal that the real action could begin. The old man was still alive for another day. It was vacation time. He'd been let out of the pen. My mother, picking up her cue, said, "Well, everything's about set." "Okay, give me that list." He roared around the kitchen, his VVDs flapping obscenely as he rechecked the pile of rubber ducks, beach balls, old inner tubes, spyglasses, straw hats, fielder's mitts, all of it. He rushed into the bathroom to shave and emerged a few minutes later with a wad of toilet paper plastered to a nasty gash on his chin. By now, we had moved perhaps a ton and a quarter of stuff out into the weeds of the backyard, which at this time of the year were usually knee-high, filled with green caterpillars and millions of stickers. The neighborhood dog, sensing that something was afoot, scurried around and around the cardboard boxes, yipping. A couple of them did more than that. Piece by piece, carton by carton, every available inch of the back seat was packed solid. The old man had a Sears luggage rack clamped onto the roof of the Olds. The heavy stuff was loaded on top, comforters, folding camp chairs, beach umbrellas. At last, he crawled in behind the wheel, rolled down his window, and peered over a pile of junk next to him to see if my mother was in place. Back in the rear, my brother and I were wedged into two tiny cockpits burrowed into the wall of tightly packed essentials for living. My mother, for some reason, always pretended that going to Clear Lake was something like traveling to the North Pole. You had to be ready for anything. The doors were slammed, windows adjusted, and finally, the old man gave his yearly cry, "Okay, here we go." Outside in the yard, a motley collection of well-wishers had gathered, including Flick, Swartz, Kessel, and other small fry who moved in the substrata of kid life, nameless, noses running, never invited to play ball. The old man turned the key in the dash and stepped on the starter. From deep within the bowels of the Oldsmobile came a faint click. He jabbed again at the starter. Another click. His neck reddened. "Oh, for Christ's sake, that damn starter spring struck again." The sun beat down mercilessly on our wheeled pyramid, the interior growing hotter by the second. Enraged, the old man threw the door open and rushed around to the front of the old shop. "Turn the key on when I jump up and down on the bumper." Grabbed the radiator ornament. a shoddy copy of the Winged Victory, climbed on the bumper and began to bounce maniacally up and down. It was a routine we all knew well. The old man, his face beet red, hopped up and down in a frenzy. Once again, deep within the olds, came another faint click. Instantly, the old man shouted, "Don't nobody move, sit real still." He tore around the side of the car, eased himself into the driver's seat. It was a touchy moment. Carefully, so as not to create the slightest vibration, he pushed the starter button on the floor. Gug, 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 started to catch. The old man whispered hoarsely, "Don't nobody move, don't nobody breathe." Tried again, gug, 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 the mighty six-cylinder, low-combustion Oldsmobile engine rattled into life, rocker arms clattering, valve springs clanging, pistons slapping. After all, 142,000 miles isn't exactly around the block. He threw her into reverse, and slowly she lumbered backward down the driveway, swaying under the immense load of half the available stock of the A&P. Safely out on the street, he threw her into first. Painfully, she began to roll forward. I peered out of the tiny crack a window available to me, square of glass no more than 3 inches across, and saw my assembled friends standing dumbly along the sidewalk. For a brief instant, I felt a deep pang of regret about all the great things that were going to happen in the neighborhood while I was gone. From somewhere off to my left, amid the rumblings of the olds, I heard the first muffled squeakings of my kid brother. 2 minutes later, we turned down a side road toward the main highway that wedged its way listfully past junkyards and onion patches toward the distant, rolling, sandy hills of Michigan. It was Sunday, and already a solid line of automobiles, bumper to bumper, stretched from one horizon to the other, barely moving. The old man, his eyes narrowed with hatred, glared through the windshield at his most ancient and implacable foe, the traffic. "Damn Sunday drivers, stupid sons of bitches." He was warming up for the big scenes yet to come. As traffic fighters go, he was probably no more talented nor dedicated than most other men of his time, but what he lacked in finesse, he more than made up for in sheer veracity. His vast catalog of invective, learned in the field, so to speak, back of the stockyards on the south side of Chicago, had enriched every Sunday afternoon drive we ever took. Some men gain their education about life at their mother's knee, others by reading yellowed volumes of fiction. I nurtured and flowered in the back seat of the old, listening to my father. At least we were on our way. No one can deny that. We crept along in the great line of Sunday traffic, the olds muttering gloomily as its radiator temperature slowly mounted. My mother occasionally shouted back through the din in our direction, "Are you kids all right?" All right, I was out of my head with excitement. I looked forward to this moment all year long. It made Christmas and everything else pale to nothing. I had pored over every issue of Field and Stream in the barbershop, dreaming about tracking beavers and fording streams and making hunters stew. Of course, nobody ever did any of those things in Michigan, but they were great to read about. One time, our scoutmaster took us on a hike through Holman and painted moss on the north side of all the fire plugs so that we could blaze a trail to the vacant lot behind the Sherman Williams sign. But that was about the extent of my expertise in nature lore. Hour after hour, we inched northward, finally burst out of the heavy traffic and turned into the rolling open highway that led through the sandy hills to Marcellus, Michigan. By now it was well along in the afternoon and the temperature inside the car hovered at maybe 15 or 20 degrees below the boiling point. The olds had a habit of hitting the thrumming, resonant vibration at about 50 that jiggled the bones, loosened the molars, rattled the eyeballs, and made all talk totally impossible. But over the roar, a faint squeak filtered through the curtains to my left, My mother turned in her seat, took one look, and shouted at the old man to stop the car. "What the hell now?" he bellowed as he pulled over to the side of the road under a pair of great overhanging Michigan poplars. Everywhere around us, the yellow and dun fields mottled with patches of grapevines stretched out to the horizon. My mother dashed around to the side of the car to my brother's door. I heard him being hauled out of his tiny capsule. Oatmeal, Ovaltine, caterpillars, everything he had downed in the past couple of days gushed out into the lilies. I sat in my slot, peering out of the window at the alien landscape. My excitement now at fever pitch. Randy always got sick about this point. That meant we were halfway there. Ashen-faced, he was stuffed back into his hole. Once again, the starter sprung stuck. Once again, the old man raged up and down on the bumper. "Don't nobody move. Sit real still." We were off. It was then that the bombshell struck. Oh, no. Oh, no. I slumped deep down in the seat, a 2-pound box of rice sliding from the shelf behind me and pouring its contents on the back of my neck. The Oldsmobile boomed on toward Clear Lake and its fighting 3-ounce sunfish, its 7-inch bluegills, and its 5-inch perch, all waiting for me under lily pads, beside submerged logs and in the weed beds. Oh no, I had left all my fishing tackle in the garage, all piled up next to the door, where I had taken it the night before to make sure I wouldn't forget it. Every sinker, every bobber, every hook I had saved for, polished, loved, and cherished, stood neatly piled up back home in the garage. "Dad!" I cried out in anguish. The great thrum of the olds drowned me out. "Hey, Dad!" He glanced into the rearview mirror. "Yeah, I left all my fishing tackle in the garage." That meant his, too. "What?" He straightened up in his sweat-soaked pongee shirt. "You did what?" For Christ's sake, what next?" He spit through the open window into the onrushing hot air. It arched back into the rear window and missed my brother's head by an inch. My mother had been asleep now for some time. She never stirred through this disaster. Deep in my hole, I wept. The steady, rumbling oscillation of the ancient olds rolled back over me. Way down deep inside, the first faint gnawings of car sickness, like some tiny gray beady-eyed rat scurrying among my vitals, merged appropriately with the disappointment and the heat. A faint whiff of the sweetie sour aroma of my kid brother filtered through the camp gear, drifted past my nose, and out the window to my right. I stared with glazed eyes at the blur of telephone poles, at a barn with a huge Bull Durham sign on it with its slogan, "Her Hero." At farmhouse after farmhouse, at a rusty tin sign with its faded message, "Hooked rugs for sale, also eggs." The low hills, green, yellow, and brown, wound on and on. I had wrecked the vacation. You might just as well tell Santa Claus to go to hell as leave your split bamboo crafting rod that you saved all year to buy and that had a cork handle and a level wind Sears Roebuck reel with a red jewel in the handle and your daredevil wiggler so red and white and chromey back in the garage amidst the bald Goodyears and empty Simonized cans. Oh well, nothing ever works out anyway.
Hello, gentle listeners. You're listening to Gremlin Time on KBOO, Portland's finest English-speaking station, 90.7 FM.
Thank you. listening to a story by Gene Shepherd called Ollie Hop Noodle's Haven of Bliss. This is kind of a re-airing of a show from a couple of years ago here on Gremlin Time. Oh, there's a lot of Artie Shaw in the background here. This is Fletcher Henderson, Christopher Columbus, a bunch of other songs like that. This is dedicated to summer, but also Father's Day yesterday. Oh, we used to take trips like this all the time. Every summer, we'd be headed down to California. Of course, my folks, you know, they'd been on trips like that since they were kids in the 30s. So, of course, they would, and my grandparents would stop at every one of those roadside places. But for us, no, we were like, no, we got to get to the hotel down there in Redding. No, we're not going to the Trees of Mystery or the Winchester House. But we did stop at San Simeon quite a bit, so that's what I'm saying. So we'll get back to our story. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there who are with us and been gone. And this is Gremlin Time, so we'll be back again with Ollie Hop Noodles, Haven of Bliss. Wrapped it up and called it Swing. That was Fletcher Henderson with Christopher Columbus. This is Fortunato, the over 40 teenage werewolf here on Gremlin Time. And tonight we are taking a summer vacation just as the weather's returned to normal here in the Rose City. Yes, we're in pre-summer here in the Pacific Northwest and the maritime weather that we call Portland, in what we call Portland. And so pre-summer, this will last, oh, it can last up to like mid-July, so you just got to wait for it. But, you know, pretty soon summer's going to be here. It's going to sit down next to you. It's going to order drinks all around. We'll be counting the days when there's no rain. That's going to be in the future. And you might even be getting in the car and going on a big road trip like in tonight's story, which is by Gene Shepherd. It's called Ollie Hop Noodles, Haven of Bliss. This is an abridged version. There's lots more fun stuff that happened that we couldn't include in an hour. So you can look for it in the book, Wanda Hickey and Her Night of Wicked Wonders. Once again, Gene Shepherd's story, Ollie Hop Noodle and his Haven of Bliss. Over the steady hum of the mighty old's engine, I could hear the pitiful keening of my kid brother, who had now burrowed down to the floorboards in his travail. I stared sullenly out the window. Over a huge rolled-up dark green comforter and an orange crate full of coffee pots and frying pans. Suddenly, the car reeled drunkenly under the retching blows of a disintegrating Allstate tire. Front seat, the driver wrestled with the heaving steering wheel, overloaded by a quarter ton at least. The car continued to lurch forward. Ding, 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 ding. It was down to the rim now. My father hauled back on the emergency brake. He slew up onto the gravel shoulder of the highway and rolled to a limping stop. Cut the ignition. But for a full 20 seconds or so, the motor continued to turn over, firing on sheer heat. Finally, she coughed twice and stopped. Dead silence enveloped us all. My father sat unmoving behind the wheel, his hands clenched on the controls in silent rage. "Do you think it's a flat?" my mother chirped helpfully, her quick mechanical mind analyzing the situation with deadly accuracy. "No, I don't think it could be that. Probably we ran over a pebble." His voice was low, almost inaudible.
drenched in sarcasm. "I'm glad to hear that," she sighed with relief. "I thought for a minute we might have had a flap." He stared out his window at the sheared corn stalks across the road, watching the corn borers destroy what was left of the crops after the locusts had finished their work. We sat for possibly 2 minutes, frozen in time and space like flies in amber. Then, in the lowest of all possible voices, he breathed toward the cornfield, "Balls." Very quietly, opened the door, climbed out, and stalked back to the truck. "All you get out!" he shouted. My mother, realizing by this time that it hadn't been a pebble after all, whispered, "Now don't get on his nerves and don't whine." The four of us gathered on the dusty gravel along the road behind us for a quarter mile at least. Chunks of black twisted rubber smoked in the sun and marked our trail of pain. The old man silently opened the door, peered into the tangled mess of odds and ends that always filled it, and began to rummage glumly among the shards. He removed the clamp that released the spare tire. In his world, spare tires were tires that had long since been given extreme unction, but had somehow clung to a thread of life and perhaps a shred or two of rubber. Next, the jack. We sat at a safe distance next to the cornfield, in the shade of an elm tree, suffering from oak blight. "Let's have a picnic while Dad fixes the tire," suggested Mother cheerfully. Daddy, his shirt drenched in sweat, tore his thumbnail off while trying to straighten out the jack handle, which was insanely jointed in four different spots, making it as pliable as a wet noodle and about as useful. While he cursed and bled, we opened the lunch basket and fished out the warm cream cheese sandwiches and the lunch meat and relish sandwiches. "Give me a peanut butter sandwich. Give me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich," said my kid brother. "We don't have peanut butter and jelly." "I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich." "We have a nice tuna and egg salad sandwich on rye bread. You can pick the seeds out and have fun making believe that they're little bugs." "I want a peanut butter and jelly." Randy's voice was rising to a shrill pitch. Off in the middle distance, the jack clanked and rattled as the old teetered precariously on the flimsy metal support. "God damn it, in 2 seconds, I'm gonna come over and bat you one good," yelled the tire repairman. Randy threw his tuna salad sandwich out into the road, where it was instantly smashed flat by a Mack truck. Our little picnic went on. We drank lemonade, ate cookies. Finally came the call. "Okay, pile in." My father stonily drove on. Sometimes after a particularly bad flat, he didn't speak to the family for upward of 2 weeks. I suspected that he always pictured heaven as a place where everybody was issued a full set of brand new 4-ply U.S. Royal Roadmasters, something he never in his life attained, at least on this earth. My mother fiddled with the car radio, which hummed and crackled. "Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel, we got the blues on the run." The Andrews sisters were always rolling out barrels and having fun. "Isn't that nice now? How about a game, kids? What am I thinking of? Animal, vegetable, or mineral?" We always played games in the car. Like who could tell quicker what kind of a car was coming towards us, or count the number of cows, or beaver, where the first guy who saw a red truck, or a blue Chevy, or a Coca-Cola sign could hit the other guy if he hollered beaver first. Then there was padiddle, which was generally played when there were girls in the car and had a complicated scoring system involving burned-out headlights, the highest point getter being a police car running one-eyed. But padiddle was never played in cars carrying mothers and kid brothers. Now what the hell? My father had broken his vow of silence. Ahead, across the highway, stretched a procession of sawhorses with flashing lights and arrows and a sign reading, "Road under construction, detour ahead, 27.8 miles. Muttering obscenities, the old man veered to the right and onto a slanting gravel cow path. Giant bulldozers and road graders roared all around us. Holy God, this'll kill that spare. The old crashed into a hole, the spring's bottom. She bellowed forward, throwing gravel high into the air. The trail wound through a tiny hamlet and then a fork where a red arrow pointed to the right. Continued detour. The road to the left was even narrower than the other, marked with a battered black and white tin sign perforated with rusting .22 caliber bullet holes. County Road 872 Altman. We fishtailed to a stop, yellow dust pouring into windows. Give me that map. The old man reached across the dashboard and snapped open the glove compartment just as a truck rumbled past, raining gravel onto the windshield and along the side of the car. What the hell is this? He yanked his hand convulsively out of the glove compartment. It dripped a dark, viscous liquid. Okay, he said in his best Edgar Kennedy slow burn. Who stuck a Hershey bar in the glove compartment? No one spoke. All right, who did it? He licked his fingers disgustedly. What a goddamn mess. The mystery of the Hershey bar was the subject of bitter wrangling off and on for years afterward. I know that I didn't stick it in there. If my brother had gotten a hold of a Hershey bar, he would have eaten it instantly. It never did come out, but then neither did the chocolate. Forevermore, the Oldsmobile had a chocolate-lined glove compartment. My father pored over the creased and greasy map. I-72, here it is. Goes through East Jerusalem and hits 438. I'll tell you what, I bet we can beat this detour by crossing through 438 to this one with the dotted red line, number 974. Then we'll cut back, hit the highway the other side of Niles. 2.5 hours later, we were up to our hubs in a swamp. Overhead, four large crows circled angrily at the first disturbance their wilderness had seen in years. After backing and filling for half an hour, we finally managed to regain semi-solid ground on the corduroy road that we had been thumping over for the past hour or so. Neither of us spoke. We long ago had learned not to say a word in times like these. Our spattered, battered hunk hauled itself at long last back onto the main highway after traveling over patches of country that had not been seen by the eyes of man since Indian times. I knew I'd beat that damn detour. When my father really loused up, he always tried to pretend it was not only deliberate, but a lot of fun. Did you kids see those big crows? Weren't they big? And I bet you never saw quicksand before. That was really something, wasn't it? Leaving a trail of mud, we rumbled along smoothly for a few minutes on the blessed concrete. How about some of those Mary Janes? Would you kids like some Mary Janes? She was now in a great mood. Her mother scratched around in the luggage for a few moments until she found a cellophane bag full of the dentist's delight. Be careful how you chew them, she cautioned us futilely, because if you're not, you'll pull your fillings out. The sound of our munching was drowned out by the brrrm of a giant block-long truck as it barreled past our struggling flivver, eclipsing us in a deep shadow. As the truck roared past us inches away, sucking the car into its slipstream, an overwhelming cacophony of sound engulfed us, a sea of insane squawks and cluckings. Chickens! Randy hollered ecstatically. Thousands of chickens peered at us through the windows at our left side, stretching for a mile back of us. A wall of leghorns was going by. Then they were past us, and the mammoth truck pulled into the lane directly ahead of us, shredding a stream of white feathers that stuck the windshield and billowed around us and in the windows like a summer snowstorm. Almost immediately, we were enveloped in a wrenching, fetid, kick-in-the-stomach stench. It swept over us in a tidal wave of nausea. When the swallows come back to Capistrano, the ink spots chimed in on the radio. God, what a stink! Maybe you better pass him, suggested my mother through her handkerchief. Yeah, here goes. He floored the olds, but nothing happened. She was already going her limit. Ahead, the driver of the chicken truck settled into the groove, a lumbering juggernaut rolling along at 55, spraying feathers and a dark brown aroma over the countryside. Again and again, the old man edged out into the left lane, gamely trying to pass, but it was no use. The truck stayed tantalizingly just out of reach, the chickens squawking delightedly, their heads sticking out of the iron cages, their beady red eyes wild with excitement, as the driver happily headed the market. Occasionally, a stray egg whistled past or splashed into the radiator grill to join the dead butterflies, grasshoppers, and dragonflies. I have to go to the toilet. Already, we had stopped at 75 gas stations so that Randy could go to the toilet. His output was incredible. You'll just have to hold it. It had begun to rain. Big, ripe summer drops. The windshield wipers were stuck, and now my father drove with his head craned out the window in order to see. Rain ricocheted off his face and splattered everything within a 2-foot radius. It carried with it chicken feathers and other byproducts that streamed back from the truck ahead. But this was not the first time we'd been caught behind moving livestock. A load of ducks made chickens a pure joy. And one time, we'd been trapped for over 4 hours behind 37 sheep and at least 200 exuberantly ripe porkers on U.S. 41. The rain suddenly stopped, just when the menagerie boomed into a turnoff and peace reigned once again. A few feathers clung to the headlights here and there, but the last lingering aroma of the barnyard finally departed through the rear windows. And, oh, I got a wee-wee! All right, but this is the last time, you hear? No answer. Randy was promising nothing. Ahead, a one-pump gas station crouched amid the cornfields next to a white shack that had once been a diner, but was now sinking into the clay, carrying with it its faded red sign with the single word, EAT. Under a rusted soft drink cooler sprawled a mangy hound who greeted our arrival by opening one rheumy eye and lifting a leg to scratch wearily and indiscriminately at his undernourished rumen borders. We pulled up next to the pump, a thin, creased, dusty old man wearing a blue work shirt and faded jeans sat chewing a toothpick beside the screen door on an old wooden chair with his feet on a Phillips 66 oil drum. He didn't stir. Fill her up, bub. Kid's gotta go to the toilet. He shifted the toothpick. Round the side, past them tires. You can check the oil while we're waiting. Taking one foot off the oil drum, then the other, the man struggled to his feet. With painful deliberation, shuffled over to the car and fiddled with the hood latch for a minute or so. Finally, getting the knack of it, he yanked it open, leaned over the engine, pulled out the dipstick and held it up. It dripped red, viscous sludge onto the gravel. Needs about quarts. It always needed 2 quarts. You want the good stuff or the cheap stuff? That cheap stuff. Put in the heaviest you got. The old crate burned oil like a diesel. My mother and Randy were back in the car now. It was a typical pit stop on our long caravan route to Clear Lake and Paradise. A mile up the road, my mother, making conversation, said, why didn't you get gas? I didn't want any of that cheap bootleg gas that guy had. I'm waiting for a Texas Blue station. Texas Blue was an obscure gasoline that had at one time sponsored the Chicago White Sox ball games on radio, thereby winning my father's undying patronage. If Texas Blue backed the White Sox, it was his gas. He would have used it if they had distilled it from old cabbages. A single red sign stuck to the road's shoulder at a crazy angle, whizzed by in white letters. It read, Listen, birds, My father lit another Lucky and leaned forward on the alert, peering through the bug-spattered windshield. These signs cost money. The second red and white announcement flashed by, followed quickly by the third. So roost a while. The old man flicked his match out the side window, his neck craning in anticipation of the snapper. We drove on and on. Had some crummy, rotten fiends stolen the punchline. Another sign loomed up over the next hill. He squinted tensely. Genuine cherry cider for sale. For Christ's sake, he muttered, amid thrumming uproar and the constant ping of kamikaze gnats and beetles on the splattered windshield. But finally it came, half hidden next to a gnarled oak tree at the far end of a long sweeping curve. But don't get funny. I didn't get it. But then I didn't get much of anything in those days. A few yards further on, the sponsor's name flashed by, Burma Shave. Up front, the old man cackled appreciatively, his favorite form of reading, next to the Chicago Herald American sports section, was Burma Shave signs. He could recite them like a Shakespearean scholar quoting first folios. He had just added another gem to his repertoire. In the months to come, it would be referred to over and over, complete to location, time of day, and pertinent weather information. In fact, he and his pal, Zudok, even invented their own Burma Shave signs, pungent, unprintable, and single entendre. It would have been a great ad campaign if the Burma Shave Company had had the guts to do it. It began to rain again. My father rolled up his window partway. Normally, the atmosphere in the olds is in full cry, was a faint, barely discernible blue haze, an aromatic mixture of exhaust fumes from the split muffler, a whiff of manifold heat, burning oil, sizzling grease, dust from the floorboards, alcoholic steam from the radiator, and the indescribably heady aroma of an antique tangerine left over from last year's trip that had rolled under the front seat and gotten wedged directly in front of the heater vent. Now, subtly blended with this oleo were the heavenly scents of wet hay, tiger lilies, yellow clay, and fermenting manure. Hey, look, there's Crystal Lake! My father pointed off to the left. I sat bolt upright, way off past a big gray farmhouse and a bank of black trees. Under the darkening sky was a tiny flash of water. A gravel road slanted off into the trees, bracketed by a thicket of signs, boats for rent, bathing, fishing, overnight cabins, beer, eats. We were in vacation land. Oh boy. In the back seat, I had broken out into a frenzied sweat. In just a few minutes, we'd be there, at the one and only place where everything happened, Clear Lake. For months, when the snow piled high around the garage and the Arctic wind whistled past the blast furnaces into the open hearth and around the back porch under the eaves and through the cracks in the windowsills, I had lain tossing on my solitary pallet and dreaming of Clear Lake, imagining myself flexing my magnificent split bamboo casting rod, drifting toward the lily pads where a huge bronzeback, an evil, legendary smallmouth bass named Old Jake, waited to meet his doom at my hands. I would see myself showing my dad how to tie a royal coach fly, which I had read about in Sports Afield. He would gasp in astonishment. I would astonish my mother in these dreams by demonstrating an encyclopedic grasp of camp cookery. I had practically memorized an article entitled How to Prepare the Larger Game Fish. The text began, "A skillful angler knows how to broil landlocked salmon and lake trout in the 25 to 40 pound weight range." I'd never seen, let alone cooked, a salmon or a trout or a pike or anything else, except for a little sunfish, perch, bullheads, and the wily crabby. But I was ready for them. We rounded a familiar curve and rolled past a green cemetery dotted with drooping American flags, past a general store with a cluster of yellow cane poles leaning against its wooden front, amid a pile of zinc washtubs. We arrive. Now look, you kids, you stay in the car. Hey, Ollie! The old man shouted out of the side window towards the feed store. Hey, Ollie, we're here! Through the rain-spattered windshield, we could see that a few lights were on here and there in the ramshackled white clapboard buildings overhung with willows and sweeping elm trees that lined the street. We turned off the main highway and drove along the beloved twisting dirt road, now a river of mud that led through cornfields and meadows, down toward the magical lake. Next to every cabin but one was a parked car pulled up under the tree. Well, there she is. Our lights swung over the rear of a starboard-leaning, green-shingled, screen-enclosed cabin. Above the back door, painted on a weathered 2x4, was the appellation Haven of Bliss. All of Ollie's other cottages had names too. Bide a wee, rest a spell, do drop in, never care, sun and fun. We inched under the trees. My father switched off the olds. The great gasping shudder, she sank into a deep stupor, her yearly trial by fire half over. Rain was coming down hard now, bouncing on the roof of the car and dripping off the trees all around us. I tumbled out of the back door, plunging into mud up to my ankles, and began sloshing my way down through the wet brushes and undergrowth to the lake. Behind me, I could hear my kid brother already whining that the mosquitoes were biting him. There at my feet, lapping quietly at the rocks, the black water faintly aglow, was Clear Lake. In the darkness, a few feet offshore, I could dimly make out our wooden boat, the waves slapping against its sides, ka-tunk, tunk, ka-splat, plop, plop, one of the most exciting sounds known to man. Hey, come on, we gotta unload, everything's getting wet. When it was all indoors, the old man stripped off his soaked shirt and sprawled out on a lumpy blue kitchen chair. Well, here we are. Boy, am I hungry. My mother had already opened a can of Spam. We sat amid the boxes, downing 2-inch thick sandwiches. We gotta set the alarm, because we want to get out real early to fish, announced the old man between bites. My kid brother was already asleep in the next room. If you want to get the big ones, you got to... Father's tackle box, his bobbers, his secret gypsy fish bait oil that he had bought from the mail order catalog. But, Dad, don't you remember? I told you, I began miserably. So how come I found it on top of the car? I wonder who put all that fishing stuff on top of the car, I guess maybe somebody must have snuck up and put it all on top of the car when you weren't looking. 10 minutes later, I lay in the dark, ecstatic with relief and expectation, huddled under damp blankets and a musty comforter. The rain roared steadily on the roof, as it would for the next 2 weeks, and drummed metronomically onto the bare wooden floor beside my bed. Ka-tunk, ka-tunk, plop, plop, plop. The boat called to me from the dark lake. From somewhere out in the woods, something squeaked twice, and then was silent. My kid brother tossed and whimpered softly from beneath his pillow. And across the room, my father's low, mumbling snores thrummed quietly in the night. We were on vacation! You've been listening to Ollie Hopnoodle's Haven of Bliss, a short story by Gene Shepherd. You can find it in the book Wanda Hickey and Her Night of Wicked Wonders. It's been Fortunato. Thanks for tuning in. Joe Woods is hiding around here somewhere.
And we'll have the Tiki Cha-Cha Club coming up at midnight here on Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Let's see here. How much time have I got left here? I think I got time enough for one good song here. Yeah, baby. This is the original version from 1961. The Dave Bailey Quintet. Coming Home, Baby. We'll be right back.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Crystal Clear Supplements, providing nootropics, dietary supplements, and botanicals to the local community and patrons on the internet. Crystal Clear Supplements is located at 3211 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland, just south of Powell Boulevard by the Aladdin Theater. Information and online shopping at crystalclearsupplements.com. Tiki Cha Cha Club. Tiki Cha Cha Club. Well, here we are, and there we go with another